Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is the opposite of stress. And the numbers to call if you want coaching on any area of your life is 1-866-254-1579. It's toll free, 866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach the show on 001-760-918-4. 4300. And just before we go to the phones, I want to sort of set the topic, set the table for today. One of the things that I've noticed over the years, really, is when a client tells me they're stressed out, there's two things that are always present. And those two things are a busy mind and an icky feeling. In other words, there's always a lot going on in their heads. It's like, oh, and I've got to do this, and I've got to do that, and I've got to do this, and I've got to do that. And there's always kind of this general horrible, adrenaline-y, ick feeling. That's the technical term we coaches use, an ick feeling. What makes it worse is that the two things tend to feed on each other. So the worse you feel, the busier your mind tends to get because you're trying to figure out what's wrong and you're trying to figure out what to do about it. And I mean, this isn't normal. I shouldn't feel like this. So there's got to be something I got to do. And of course, the busier your mind gets, the worse you tend to feel. Because you've got all these thoughts going on in your head and you totally get disconnected from your body. And then your body tends to kind of fill that void that's left by your awareness, because your awareness has gone off into your head, and it fills that void with tension and with stress. So in order to help people reconnect with what I consider to be your innate happiness, your innate well-being, I'll often point them towards what I believe is the opposite of stress. So if stress is a busy mind and an icky feeling, then the opposite of stress is a quiet mind and a beautiful feeling. And same as the other two, these two things, they really feed each other in a wonderfully positive way. So the quieter your mind is, the more beautiful feelings you're going to tend to feel in your body, because your mind's really quiet. And so you listen and you hear the sounds of whatever there is around you. And there's usually a nice feeling that comes with that. Now, the other thing that comes with that is the more beautiful the feeling you have in your body, the quieter your mind tends to become, because, oh, you really focus in on that beautiful feeling. And so you realize, oh, I don't have to go do stuff right now. I can just be present with this feeling. It just feels nice right now. So one of my favorite analogies, and I've used this on the show before, but I'm going to share it again because I think it's a powerful analogy. And if you want to get in, numbers to call 866-254-1579. It's toll free, 866-254-1579, or from outside the United States, 001-760-918-4300. And here's an analogy. So think of the mind like a tachometer, the RPM, revolutions per minute gauge on a racing car. Now, generally speaking, on a racing car, you're going to use the tachometer to let you know when the engine's functioning optimally, so you know when to shift gears. But what if instead of measuring RPM, like revolutions per minute, your mental tachometer measures TPM, or thoughts per minute? So I'm going to make this up, okay? This is not a real scale. But let's say that your brain's thoughts per minute tachometer ran on a scale something like this. So if you have 0 to 50 thoughts per minute, 0 to 50 TPM, you're going to be just optimal functioning. You're going to have wonderful feelings going on in your body. If your brain speed, your thoughts per minute, is 50 to 100, well, that's healthy functioning. You're going to have good feelings going on inside you as you do that. 100 to 200 thoughts per minute. Well, if your brain's beginning to spin a little like that, you're beginning to overload. You're going to experience some mild stress. 200 to 300, so your thoughts are going even faster, and there's more thoughts, and then there's thoughts about the thoughts, and I shouldn't think those thoughts, and these are the right thoughts. Well, that's when it starts spinning out of control, and that's when you've got a feeling of persistent stress. And then if you're over 300 thoughts per minute, well, that's going to lead to mental burnout. That's extreme stress. So when you find yourself experiencing stress in your life, one of the things that you can know is that you can reduce, and often you can eliminate the stress entirely by just slowing down your thought speed. And there's thousands of books, and I think probably a quarter of them are published by Hay House, about the power of meditation and the power of prayer and the power of chanting and even Byron Katie stuff on questioning your thoughts to set yourself free, there's a simpler truth. You don't need to do anything to slow down your thoughts. And let me tell you what I mean. If you want to slow down your car engine, if you want to have less RPM, you do it by not pressing on the gas. You don't press the brake to slow down the engine. You just don't step on the gas. If you want to slow down your thoughts, you do it by not speeding them up. So in other words, a quiet mind, that's actually your default setting. That's the place that you're naturally going to return when you're not artificially revving up your thoughts, trying to control the future or figure out the past. And that's that quiet mind, that's so often accompanied by a beautiful feeling. That because you're in a quiet mind and because you've got that beautiful feeling, the idea of trying to make yourself feel better, make yourself happy by finding the right job, sorting out your relationship, getting the right relationship, I need more money, I need to eat. Doing all that stuff in order to be happy is doing things in the wrong order. And it gets the point when your mind goes quiet and you're in that beautiful feeling, it just feels silly. It's like the analogy one of my clients said, it's like practicing having a nose. You know, at best, it's unnecessary. And at worst, it kind of gets in the way. So we're going to talk a little more about that. But let's go to the phones. Let's talk to Patty in Lake Tahoe. Patty, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Last week I spoke to you. You gave me an assignment, and it was to tell 10 people about my idea to have this radio show. Well, I told the 10 people, and each person was, like, validating, wanting to be on the show. It was just phenomenal, the response.
Okay.
It was
so
really,
I'm sorry about that.
No, it was wonderful. I so appreciated you giving me that homework, because really what it got me to do is to see that all I have to do is ask and see what would happen. And in that, so many good things happened. But now a little bit of stress is kind of seeping in, because now I have to get this web page up, which I don't know how to do. I'm trying to teach myself all these new things. So I feel a little on overwhelm, a little, because now I feel like it's no longer in the beginning stages of the idea. It's more in the middle. And I feel, like, very vulnerable in it, you know, because I want it to happen, and now it's like, okay, so now this is really going to happen, you know?
it's fine when it's a fantasy, but wait,
yeah.
You mean I could really have it? Look, that's why my first book was called You Can Have What You Want, mm-hmm. not because it was like a positive thinking, you can do it, tiger, mm-hmm. book, but because until you know that you actually can have what you want, people get caught up in all this mental busyness about, well, I should have it, or I need to prove to people that I can do this, and it becomes all about them. Once you realize that actually you could have it, then it becomes about, do you want it? Mm-hmm. And there's no hiding anymore. It's not about, well, I would, but it's just like, yes or no. So I get that. But let me talk to you about overwhelm a little bit. Because
okay.
Overwhelm doesn't just happen. Mm-hmm. Okay, overwhelm is something we do. And we do it by keeping our mind really, really busy. So in order to feel overwhelmed, what you have to do is stack thoughts. You have to place one thought on top of the next, on top of the next, on top of the next, and then try and deal with them like a big fat sandwich. See, if you just took one thought, so this is like what I was saying about slowing down the mind speed, slowing down the thought speed. So if you had, what's one thought that comes up for you about what there is to be done in the business to move it forward?
The web page.
Okay. So if your only job this week was to get a web page up and you were allowed to have help, because I don't know about the game that you're playing, but like,
No, I am so, please help.
Okay, great.
I was just checking.
I mean,
no.
You know, some people have the game set up that it only counts if I do it myself.
No.
Okay, so if your only job mm-hmm. was to get the web page up and you were allowed to have help, is that an overwhelming thought to you?
No.
Okay, so we know that it isn't that activity that's overwhelming or stressful. It's something to do with the way you're thinking about all the activities. So what's another thought? What's another one of the things that kind of comes up as, oh, this needs to be done to move the business forward?
To sell the time. sponsorship.
To get sponsorship. Okay. So now what are the actual activities? Because that's like a mini goal.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that often gets people stuck is they put mini goals on their to-do list. So they'll put things on their to-do list like sell sponsorship, mm-hmm. as if it's just something that you do and you can tick off. Selling sponsorship is a goal.
Right.
What are the activities? In other words, what's one of the activities that is likely to lead to your selling sponsorship?
Writing down who to contact.
Okay, great. Stop there. If your only job today mm-hmm. was to make a list to write down who to contact, would that be overwhelming to you?
No.
Okay, so again, we know it's not the task, it's the way that you're holding the tasks. So what's another thing? What's another thing that would help reach the goal, that would make it more probable that you would reach the goal of getting sponsorship for the show? So you've written down who to contact.
Right.
You've got the webpage up.
I've got the webpage up. And then I'd have to call them.
Okay. Yeah. So who would be, and you can say Bob, I mean, but just so you know.
Yeah.
So who would be the first person that you'd call? Bob. Okay, you've got somebody in mind for Bob.
Yes, I do.
Okay, great. So if your only job today, your only job, that was it. It's like you got the day off, one thing on your list, call Bob.
Okay.
Is that overwhelming to you?
No.
Okay. So are you noticing a pattern?
Yeah, that if I just do it just like baby steps, I feel better about it than if I look at the whole thing. The big elephant kind
right.
of thing. You
yeah,
know?
I mean, it's the old joke. How do you eat an elephant?
Yeah.
One bite
yeah,
at a time.
It's true.
And the beauty of it is, as you kind of notice that, then the next time you feel overwhelmed, it'll be that much easier to just go, oh, I see. I'm just busying my mind. I'm just stacking all these things on top of each other like they all have to be done all at once.
Yeah, that is what it feels like to me when I have the, okay, let's say I'm going on websites and looking at everybody's website, and they're so beautiful and so well done, and there's so much great wording, and and I'm looking at this thinking, okay, how do I get that to happen? You know, so I really know that I need help with this. So I had notified another person who's doing a similar radio show, and she called me, or actually emailed me, and gave me her web page designer. So I got that overwhelm feeling to kind of subside because now I know somebody who could do it for me. So
right.
It feels like, oh.
And here's the trick going forward, mm-hmm. is it feels like, from what you just said, mm-hmm. that the overwhelm subsided because you did you got a result.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna suggest from our conversation, mm-hmm. the overwhelm subsided because you stopped stacking that on top of everything else.
Right. I didn't look at it like I had to do it.
Right. So when you hear yourself languaging things like, well, I've got to do this and I've got to do that and I've got, mm-hmm. you know, you're stepping on the accelerator. Just take your foot off the accelerator and just go, okay, what's now?
Right. And to me, I feel like there's no time frame that I'm up against. Like I don't have there's no like, oh, you have to do this by August 3rd. You know, I don't have that, you know, so if I'm creating my own stress, it's just because of what I'm thinking.
Right. And that's exactly, that's true of every single person listening to the show
mm-hmm.
and every single person not listening to the show. And so again, simple solution. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't do that. Yeah. Like that joke. Huh?
Absolutely. Doctor, it hurts when I do this.
I know. Don't do that. I know. I hear you. I do.
All right.
Thank you for reminding me.
Thank you, Patty.
Okay, Michael.
All right. We're going to go back to the phones. We're going to go to Gina in Wisconsin. Gina, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. I'm happy to get through. I'm hoping that maybe you could help me with some strategies. I have a national exam I need to take, and I've taken it once before and failed it, and I've never been good at taking exams, test exams like this, multiple choice types. I'm wondering if you have some words of wisdom or some strategies for me.
Yeah, I got a couple of things, actually. One is, when you say national exam,
mm-hmm.
is that scarier than a local exam?
Yes.
Okay. So I would stop doing that to yourself, first off.
Okay.
Because, you know, when you add weight to it, it gets heavier.
Okay.
So you got a test. I got it. You got a test coming up.
Yep.
Okay. So here is my favorite strategy for multiple choice tests. And I learned this, fortunately, when I was still a student, full-time student. And I've taught it to my kids. And it works really, really well. So okay. I'm gonna suggest it to you. Now, I will say, if it's your first time doing it, you might find it a little weird. But it's not that weird. So let me explain it, and then you can ask me questions if they're there.
Okay.
So what you do is the first time through, you only answer the questions that are easy.
Okay.
So you go, oh, one, don't know that, two, don't know that, three, don't know that. Oh, four, yeah, I know that. Five, I know that, six, seven, eight, nine, 10. Oh, I got that one. Okay. So you go all the way through, top to bottom, and answer all the easy questions.
Okay.
Then you go back and you work on all the questions that you think you could work out.
Okay.
It's like, okay, I can figure this out. It's just going to take a little time. And you go through all of those. Now, the third category, just so you know what's different, is the ones where you go, I don't even know where to start.
Okay.
So you leave those till last. Okay. And the reason this works well is because time-wise, you're getting all the possible right answers first. You're getting the most likely right answers, which are the easy ones. Then, okay. In whatever time you've got left, you're going to get the next most likely right answers, which are the ones that you think you can work out. And then if you still have time left, you'll go with the third group. And there's two ways that I found that work really well with the third group, the ones where you don't have a clue. And one of them is guess. So it's like people think, oh, but I can't do that. Yeah, you can.
Okay.
And one of the reasons that a guess isn't really a guess is if you've spent any time studying,
Yeah. Chances
are that information is in there.
Okay.
And so your guess, there's a reason why you'll pick B and somebody who doesn't have any clue would pick C. So very often, your guess is actually intuitively guided.
Okay.
Now, here's a trick. Now, this one, I have to say, my son loved this. I taught it to my middle daughter, and she said, that's cheating. Now, I guess why she says this, but to me, there's nothing cheating about this.
Okay.
Here's what you do. Did you have a teacher? For this stuff that you were studying,
I just obtained a master's degree.
Mm-hmm.
So part of my licensing requirement is taking this national exam. I've got everything else done, and this is the last piece.
Okay, so did you have a tutor who helped you learning the material, or a mentor?
No.
Okay, who's the smart? If you could pay somebody to take the test for you, who would you get?
Probably one of the other gals who graduated from the same program, yeah.
Okay, so you've got somebody in mind?
Yeah, I do.
Give me a name. You can make the name up, but just give me a name so I have something to...
Lily,
okay. So what you do, when you get to the third, because again, the first one and the second one you're going to do. When you get to the third one, you imagine that Lily in your mind, mm-hmm. and you go, hey, Lily, what's the answer? And whatever she says, you write down.
And I'm doing this in my mind.
You're doing this in your head while you're taking the test. So remember, okay. You've already done all the stuff you know to do.
Okay.
And this is just kind of another way of guessing.
Okay.
But it's almost like, I mean, there's people make up, oh, it's psychic, it's cheating. Because normally what I would say is imagine the teacher and ask the teacher for the answer. But since there wasn't a teacher, then you just pick the person who you think would really know it. Is what you're doing is you're telling your brain, you're basically saying to your brain, hey, I know you've got the answer somewhere.
Okay.
So I'm going to pick the smartest person I know in this area, and I'm going to let them be your conduit to get that information to me.
Okay.
If it's one of those things where, look, given that plan B was guessing,
okay.
It's worth a try.
I'll give it a try.
And what I would love, love, love is if you can call us back and let us know how you do.
I will. I'll let you know.
Fantastic. Right. Thank you, Gina.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
By. I mean, it is funny, but it's amazing how well that works. And I, like I said, my middle daughter said, but that's cheating if I ask the teacher. And I'm like, well, but it's in your head. I was like, yeah, but so, you know, however you want. I happen to find it works very well, and I happen to not be able to make that cheating in my head. But I offer it up to you. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Alexia in Surfside, Florida. Alexia, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Michael.
Hello.
I have I've been a working artist for about 30 years now, and at the point, I full finish a mural for money, but with the economy, you know, I don't, what I do doesn't, you know, it's not necessary. So I'm thinking, and this could be, like, wrong, to go and get, like, a supplement, like, a career, although I teach art, too, but it's, that's off and on, too, to go into IT, which is so different, like, programming. Like, I don't even know the same brain that I use normally, because I'm, like, wanting to put money away for my retirement.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to do. I'm like, I don't want to spin my wheels and go. I really want to be in the healing arts, but I figure that would take a lot of time, like in education, to go into acupuncture or something like that. So I keep putting anything that seems like it would take money and time away from like earning.
Okay, so let me ask you a little question, Alexia. If whatever you did would work. So in other words, if you knew that you just like, you know, it was like you got a cheat code from God. So whatever you did was gonna make you the same amount of money. And you could make that money by continuing to do the art, by going to the healing arts, or by taking up IT. What would you choose?
Art.
Okay.
I mean, my whole life, I consider myself an artist before I consider myself anything else.
Okay. So that's really important. I'm not saying from that, therefore, you shouldn't learn something else and do something else. I'm saying that if you let that go, you're letting a piece of you go. That even if that goes into the background and becomes your hobby for a little while, that aliveness, that genius that you manifest through that art will keep informing everything else that you do if you keep doing it. If you stop that, okay, I need to stop the art now and get sensible, that's going to kill you.
Yeah.
So this isn't about that means you have to keep trying to make money from it. It's just keep the art going. If that's what you would do given your choice, keep doing some of that. Now, it may surprise people because I think probably most people would say, oh, well, if that's what you love, you've got to do that. Not necessarily. You know, what we do for money is what we do for money. And if there's an easier way to make money, there's no problem with doing that. You know, you've got a very specific reason to want the money, and we're in a very specific economic environment. And if you've got, like I say, you know, if you've got a way within this economic environment of doing it, you're willing to do it, I think that's great. What I do want to say, and what I just want to talk to you about a little bit, is the idea that art isn't necessary. And I don't mean in like some philosophical sense of course art is necessary. How can you? I just mean that that necessary isn't the criteria for making money. Okay, art is never necessary in that sense, but art creates value. Art makes a difference in people's lives. There's a reason that the movie industry and the television industry tend to do better in a recession and did amazingly well in the first depression. Because they created incredible value. Nobody would say that movies were necessary. And you would think in the depression particularly, you know, where people, you know, were literally starving, that the movies would be one of the first things to go. That was the making of the movie industry, that era. Because it created such an incredible value for people. It made such a tremendous difference because it gave people hope and it gave them an escape and it gave them a glimpse of something else and of what's possible and it reminded them of how things could be. It wasn't necessary, but it was valuable and that's why it succeeded. So again, I can't tell you based on a 3-minute phone call, you know, whether you should really go into the healing arts or, you know, learn IT or keep painting and trying to sell it. But what I can tell you is, A, you got to keep going with the art, even if it's just in the background, even if it's just as a hobby, because that's why you're here. That's at least part of why you're here. And the second thing is, if you start looking at all three of those things, the IT, the healing arts, and the art, not in terms of are they necessary, but in terms of where can I make a difference with this? Who can I make a difference to with this? And how big a difference can I make? That is where you're ultimately going to be able to make the money. We're coming up against the break, so I'm going to let you go. Is that useful?
Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you, Alexia. We're going to be back with more of your calls after the break. Genevieve, you will be up next after the break. If you want to get in, the numbers to call are 866-254-1579. Toll-free 866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, 001-760-918-4300. We will be right back after this break.
8-4300.
1, 2, 3, hit it. Real strategies for real change. This is Supercoach with Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking to you guys about having what you want in any area of your life. And we're also talking about the opposite of stress. We're talking about a quiet mind and a beautiful feeling. One thing I want to talk about just before I go back to the phones. I talked last week, it was pointed out to me many times, at great length about a new program that's beginning in July 1st called Creating the Impossible, 30 Days to Transform Your World. And it's an interactive coaching program with me, and it's going to run online and on the phone. And all you need to enroll is an impossible project that you want to take on in July. So that can be anything from writing your first novel to losing 30 pounds to earning $50,000. Here's the only prerequisite for the project. Well, there's three. The first is you've got to believe you've got less than a 50% chance for success in 30 days. So the point is, this isn't something you think you can do. This is something you're pretty sure you can't do. The second thing is you've got to be so passionate about what it is that you want to create that you're going to be really glad of any time you spend invested in creating it, regardless of whether or not you actually succeed in the time pressure. And then the third thing is you got to sign up. And here's where I messed up. I gave out the wrong web address, I think about 14 times last week. So if you want to sign up for the program, there's three ways to sign up. If you're a member of the Solutions Cafe, you can sign up for free. If you're a member of Steve Chandler's Cult Club Fearless, and you can find Club Fearless at www.clubfearless.net, you can sign up for free. You can also join either of those, Solutions Cafe or Club Fearless, and then as part of being part of those clubs, you can join for free, or you can join by signing up online. The address, geniuscatalyst.com/impossible.php. geniuscatalyst.com/impossible.php. I kind of left out the .php, and about 100 of you managed to sign up anyways, for which I'm very grateful. So I've created a little impossible goal around it. I'd love to have 1,000 people on it. We're into the multiple hundreds. I think we had about 300 people so far. But if you'd like to sign up, geniuscatalyst.com/impossible.php. And if you're in the Solutions Cafe or Club Fearless, you can sign up for free. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Genevieve in San Luis Obispo. Genevieve, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. I'm excited to talk to you.
Cool.
Well, I didn't want to call in unless I really wanted to hear the truth, and I know you lay it on the line, which I appreciate. I'm looking for a job right now, and I'm interested in what seems to be two very different areas, healing and then writing and editing and reading. That's kind of what I'm into.
Okay, now you've got writing, editing, and leading as one thing?
Well, I should say editing and writing, and I'll just stop there.
Okay. So one point is, yes, you can lead from anywhere. There's
right.
Ben Zander, the conductor from the Boston Philharmonic, used to say, you can lead from any chair in the orchestra.
Yeah.
So here's my question. Okay. First question. I'm going to have more than one. Are healing, writing, and editing really different? And what I mean by that is, I know that there is certain writing that is incredibly healing. Not all writing is, but there is. So if by healing you mean you want the work you do to have a healing impact, well, then it wouldn't matter what you did. You could do that if you were a baker. You know, I had a friend, I tell the story sometimes, when I did the sitcom in Wales for years. I was famous in Wales, called Satellite City. And one of the guys on the show, he and I became very good friends. He actually was a godparent to Clara. But he would never, even though I was there alone a lot of the time, he would never invite me home to his family for dinner. And they would go back every weekend for family dinner. And I started to take it personally. And I finally just talked to him about it. And I said, look, what's this about? You know, am I not good? I knew they had a little thing about my being American over there. And right. and he said, oh, no, it's not that. He said, it's my mom's cooking. You can taste the hate. And the thing is, you can taste the healing in someone's work. So I just wanted to check if healing is an energy you want to bring or an impact you want to have, or is it the actual act of doing healing that you're considering? Which is the important?
Okay.
The activity or the energy?
Most like, well, I think it's the energy. Although I kind of like the glory and the glamour of
the glory healing, and the glamour honestly. Of energy healing. You obviously haven't spent that much time with energy healers. Most of the ones, even the really good ones that I know, spend a lot of time in a very small room with sick people.
Yeah, I've studied energy healing, and I know how to do it, but experience-wise, I don't have a lot of it.
Okay. So here's another question for you. What's your criteria for deciding? In other words, is the question, which would I love most? Which will make the most money? Which will I be best at? Which will give me the most glory? In other words, what's the, you know, why does it matter? Why not just flip a coin? I'm not saying you should just flip a coin, but why not just flip a coin?
Well, because I think I would like to make I want to go for the one that makes the biggest impact. Otherwise, I feel like I'm not being helpful in the world. I feel like I want to make sure that whatever I bring to the table isn't frivolous or I want to bring whatever talents I have that are useful. I want to bring the most useful ones so I can be of the biggest impact.
Okay. So let me ask you a question. Now, it sounds like you've listened to the show a bit.
Yes.
So have you ever heard me tell the story of the time where I had to make a choice between going to the Middle East to be part of the peace process?
Yes.
or play the cartoon mouse?
Yeah, I remember
okay.
that.
Okay. So you know that when I say this, I understand that sentiment that you're expressing.
Yes.
Okay. So now I'm going to take it apart.
Because, bring it on.
Because your value and worth in the world is a given. You do not need to do anything to be worthwhile. I'm not saying there aren't things that you could do that would make a wonderful difference, but your value and worth is not dependent on what you do or do not do. Do you hear that?
Yes.
Okay. Given that you have nothing to prove, nothing to earn, nothing that you need to do to validate your existence here on the planet, what would you love to do?
Probably play with words and write.
Okay. So I'm going to go way out on a limb here and suggest you play with words and write. How's that sound?
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
It's and it's not, you know, it's not, oh my gosh, it's me, I should have known that. We all do that. We all get caught up and try and work things out and make it about us. And it isn't about you. It's so much easier when it's not about you. Years ago, Laura Huxley wrote a book called You Were Not the Target. And I mean, if I thought for a minute anyone would read it, I would write a book called It's Not About You. Success is not about you. Success comes from the difference you make in the world and the expression of your creativity. And it's a wonderful thing, but it's not about proving anything about you. You don't need to prove anything. You don't need to validate. You're good. You were born. You're a child of God. You're a child of the is. You're a child of the universe. You don't need to prove something. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I understand that, and I'm actually trying to. I understand that intellectually, but I'm trying to feel it. I guess.
So great. So it sounds to me, Genevieve, like you're beginning to feel it. because most people don't cry from an intellectual understanding.
Right.
Intellectual understandings rarely make one tear up. Oh my goodness, did you see the way Mahler used an eighth notes and created that shift in the second stanza? Oh, it brought tears to my eyes. You know, no, it doesn't work like that.
True.
So let it in. Take as long as you need to let it in.
Okay. And well, how do I even, the thing is, I don't have any of the skills. You know, I'm trying to get a job, but I don't want to put myself forth as not sincere. If I want to do this one thing, I also have to survive, but I don't want to.
So, again, this is something that I do talk about from time to time, and this seems like a really good time for me to talk about it again. Get a job. There is no shit. People have this idea that they have to make their living doing what they love. Why? In fact, it puts a lot of pressure. If you've ever read one of my favorite writers about sort of just the whole doing work that you love is Barbara Sher. And her first book was called Wishcraft, and she's got a number of wonderful books. Well, she's the first one to say, if you try too soon to turn your passion into your profit, to turn your what you love doing into your only source of income, it very often kills that passion.
Right.
Now, that's not to say you can never do it that way, but it puts a completely unnecessary pressure. I always remember this guy who came on a course. I was doing this 12-week course, sort of like Creating the Impossible, but different. And, he decided that he wanted to be a coach, and he was working in a law office. And he came up to me the day after he signed up. The course wasn't even starting for a few weeks. And he said, right, I quit my job. What do I do next? And I just said to him, see if you can get your job back. Because, my goodness, what a pressure to put on yourself. I mean, that's the opposite of stress.
Right.
Why would you do it that way? So, hey, great, get a job. You know, take a skill that you've got, go find, a way to make money, but write. Play with writing. Read writing that you love. Copy it. You know, I mean, it's a weird thing to do, but one of the great painters, I always think, if anyone ever gets this right, I'll be very grateful. I think it was Gauguin, but one of the great masters of that era with the sort of the Impressionists used to, even after he began to become famous for his own art, used to copy the paintings of Matisse and Manet and the other artists. And people say, why? You're a great artist in your own right. Why would you copy their art? And he said, because when I see their art, when I see their paintings, it looks like magic. But if I can copy it, then I know it was done by a human. And if it was done by a human, if a human could create that kind of magic, then I can create it too. And so if you read some writing and it brings you to tears and you just go, I could never write like that, copy it. Write it down word for word. Type it into a document just to show yourself. At a very tangible level, not an intellectual level, at a very tangible level, show yourself that was created by a human being, just like me. And if they can create that kind of magic, so can I.
Lovely. Okay, I'll give that a try. I'll definitely give that a try.
All right,
thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Happy writing.
All right, thanks.
Okay, bye-bye. I mean, I don't know how often I hear that kind of thing where people go, well, I've just taken this up today and I've got to be a success at it tomorrow. Well, good luck with that. That's not my experience of how things work and the sort of timing of things. And, sometimes people go, well, look at this person. They just appeared. Heck, people said that about me. I'd been doing this for 17 years before I just appeared. Chances are that anyone who's out there doing something extraordinarily well has been doing it extraordinarily well for a while, like maybe 10,000 hours. And if you're on your first hour, it's probably a little unfair on you to expect you to completely support yourself if that's what you're also trying to do with that skill. It's not to say you can't work on that skill every spare minute of your day, and if you love it, all the better. But you don't have to put the pressure on that to support you in the short term. Because as you develop that craft, if it's something that you love, you've got a genius for it. And if you've got a genius for it, you can go out there and you will succeed at it. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but you will succeed at it. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to London, to Katrina. Katrina, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Nice to speak to you, Michael.
And you? What can I? What's on your mind?
If I just tell you a bit about myself, I'm an accountant. I've been self-employed for around 10 years. I also have a passion of mine, which I've trained for 18 years. I'm a qualified ballroom and Latin American dance teacher. And
do you know, if I had a dollar for every time an accountant stroke ballroom dancer phoned the show, I just... Anyway, sorry, carry on.
And what I'm really trying to do is I really want to teach dance to children, but I am self-employed, and luckily enough, jobs have come my way during this difficult period. But every time a role is being put forward to me, I kind of go into a panic state because I feel I'm just never, ever going to get my dream off the ground to have the time to teach. Because if you're going to teach people, you have to commit to a day, you have to commit to a time. And I just feel that my work is never going to allow me to do that. And when I tend to get a contract, I always, you know, it becomes my whole life. And I just wondered if you could help how I could just pull away and give myself the time so that I can actually do the thing that I enjoy. And I trained for 18 years.
So here's what I'm going to give you something just very practical. Okay, because sometimes psychology is what's needed and sometimes just action. Okay, so I want you to send an email to radio@geniuscatalyst.com and just remind me who you are. And that I said that if you did that, that we would send you a copy of a book called Nine Lies, the Nine Lies About Your Business.
Okay.
Now, the reason that I want to send you that book, it's by my friend Steve Chandler and another guy named Sam Beckford, is because Sam makes millions by teaching people how to run successful dance studios for children. And he's absolutely brilliant. I've worked with him, not on that, not my thing, but he's absolutely brilliant. And so first off, there's a lot of great stuff in that book that you're going to find very useful that you can use both in looking at your accountancy work, but you'll also be able to look in what might be holding you back from setting up the other business. And then what I want you to do is I want you to follow up, if assuming that, you know, as you read it, and I really do believe you're gonna love it, I want you to follow up with Sam. There'll be a link to him in the book. You probably can go online and just type Sam Beckford into Google, and you'll probably find stuff.
Okay.
And then play with that. You know, flirt with it. Try it out. See what comes of it. And then when you've had a chance to read the book, I want you to phone back in. Will you do that?
I will do. So the email address is
radio@geniuscatalyst.com, and it will. One of my assistants is going to get it. They're gonna check with me and go, "Who is this woman?" And I'm going to say, "It's Katrina, guys. It's Katrina from London." And they're going to go, "Oh, sorry, Katrina. Right, we'll send her the nine lies."
Okay. All right then, Michael. Thank you very much.
An absolute pleasure. Thanks for phoning in.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Okay. You know, it's one of the things about coaching where people sort of assume that it's always going to either be practical or psychological. And actually, my experience is just, you know, sometimes what makes the difference is looking at your thinking. Sometimes what makes the difference is stop thinking. Take the busy thinking away. Remember, we're talking about the opposite of stress. We're talking about a quiet mind and a beautiful feeling. And sometimes there's just something to be done. And that just struck me as one of those times. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Evelyn in Toronto. Evelyn, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. Okay, really quickly. I'm 34. I'm living with my parents. I'm underemployed.
Okay, really slowly.
Okay.
Okay, because unless you're going quick because you've got to go somewhere, I've got 5 minutes and 41 seconds left. So slow down and tell me what's up.
Okay, and the problem is that, like, my life and my future basically is resting on me finishing my PhD, my dissertation.
Oh, no pressure.
But I always feel like I sabotage myself, and I think to myself, you know, of course I want to finish so I can have my own place.
Okay, Evelyn, I'm going to stop you right there. Mm-hmm. Not because I don't want to hear it, but because I get what you're doing to yourself, and I want to help you not do that anymore.
Okay, please.
Okay. So the show's called today, The Opposite of Stress. And the way I define the opposite of stress is a quiet mind and a beautiful feeling. And stress is when you've got a busy mind that's going really, really fast. You've got like 500 thoughts per minute in there. And I just want to deal with them one at a time. And the first one that you gave me, and I made a joke about it, and you kind of went, yeah, and moved on. So I want to slow down, not because I thought my joke was funny, but because I did it for a reason, is, you know, my life and my future are resting on this PhD. Okay, I want to tell you that without knowing anything about you, I can guarantee you 100% that is not true. Uh-huh. Do you get that? Or yes. do you want to argue it with me? I'll let you. But do you get that if you don't get your PhD, no one is going to shoot you?
Yes, I get it, but I think I'm going to shoot myself.
Okay. Well, while that's certainly a choice, not one I recommend or condone, but that's certainly a choice. We're going to go real slow here, because what I know is, as you stop revving your thoughts, what will happen is your own wisdom will start to have a space that it can speak in. You ever been in a conversation with somebody and you've got something that you know would help them and they just never shut up long enough for you to tell it to them?
Yes.
Okay. That's what you're doing to your own wisdom right now.
Okay.
Okay. So it's not me. I don't mind. You can do that to me. Uh-huh. but don't do it to your own wisdom. Because your wisdom is the thing that's going to give you exactly what you need to know. It's going to tell you what you need to know so that you can resolve this, so that you can solve this for yourself. So let's try it again. If you do not get your PhD, and I'm not suggesting that you won't or that you shouldn't, do you get that you will not die?
Yes.
Okay, great. That's the first thing. Okay. Do you get that since you won't be dead, you will still have a future?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Do you get, one last one, okay, bear with me. Do you get that if I cloned you and I told one of you, and you were going to believe me, whatever I said, and I told one of the Evelyn clones, your entire life and future is resting on this. Go do it. And I told the other one, hey, there's this really fun project called a PhD, and there's all sorts of wonderful things that you'll be able to do in your life when you've got it. Go do it. Which Evelyn do you think is going to have a better time and do better on her PhD?
The last one, where there's fun involved and there's not so much pressure.
Right. So since you're the one putting the pressure on, because you're the one telling yourself that story, you can just stop. Because remember, like I said, I don't know if you were listening at the beginning of the show, but you don't slow down the engine on a car by hitting the brake. You slow it down by taking your foot off the accelerator. And it's the same thing with your mind, with your thoughts. You don't have to stop thinking this and start thinking that. Just stop revving it. Stop adding all this stuff onto it. I'm sure there's enough coursework without you adding more in your head. So here's my question for you, because, you know, we're coming to the end of the show, and I want this to be useful for you. Would you be willing, just as an experiment, I'd like you to do it for a week, but I'm okay if you just do it for a day, to just do one thing at a time with your PhD? Like,
yes.
Just do the next thing?
Yes, I can do that.
Okay. What I think you're going to find is, because your mind will slow down, you don't have to slow it down, it will slow down. Two things are going to happen. That kind of background stress feeling that you're feeling, that's like that pressure, that's going to go away, and it might even be a little weird because you've probably gotten used to it.
Yeah.
And the second thing that's going to happen is you're going to start getting insights. I don't know exactly when and I don't know exactly what, but something's going to come to mind. You're going to go, oh, of course, why didn't I think of that? And the truth is, you did. Thank you, Evelyn.
Thank you. You're the best.
Okay, we will be back with another brand new show next week. My thanks to Rocky and Joe in studio for keeping us on air. I've enjoyed myself tremendously today. I hope you have too. You can always find out more at www.geniuscatalyst.com.
and I will talk to you next week. Have fun, learn heaps. Bye-bye for now.